Welcome to Copyright Clearance Center's podcast series. I'm Christopher Keneally for Velocity of Content. It's Friday, October 22nd, 2021. Today, as we do each week, we check in with Publishers Weekly on news from the world of books and publishing. Andrew Albanese, PW Senior Writer, joins me again with his reporting and editorial analysis. Welcome back to the program, Andrew.
Hey there, Chris.
This week, Andrew, Frankfurt Book Fair returned to the Messer Fairgrounds, and by most accounts, attendees were happy to be there.
Yeah, I think so. You know, I certainly do wish that I was there too, and I hope that we will all be back there next year, and I hope all my colleagues who were there had a terrific fair this year. As you know, I participated remotely from my home here in New York City, which was not nearly as fun. I can tell you, drinking coffee and doing these early morning panels versus, you know, being at the fair and seeing people over a beer. And of course, I certainly miss the serendipitous interactions and things you find and people that you meet walking among the halls or out on the agora. And what I heard from friends on the ground in Frankfurt was that, yeah, it was a smaller fair this year. It felt smaller. There were a lot of restrictions in place, which, you know, doesn't always go over well, Chris, as I'm sure you know, because anytime somebody is, you know, has to deal with a bag check getting into the fair, they tend to get impatient. So I can only imagine what it was like with COVID checks. But once at the fair, there were a lot of great reunions, I heard. There were a ton of hugs among people. I was told by friends who were there who were just after sharing this ordeal together, they were happy to be back together in person. So, you know, kudos and congratulations to Jürgen Bose and the fair organizers, because you did it. You revived one of the publishing world's great institutions, the Frankfurt Book Fair, back in person.
Well, even though you weren't there in person, Andrew, you did participate as a questioner in the annual Global 50 CEO Talk. The guests were two dealmakers, New York-based investment banker Robin Warner and Klaus Driver, director of sales at Munich-based Allianz Group. This year's theme was consolidation, consumers, and communities. What were your takeaways?
Yes, I thought this was a pretty good session, and I was really very interested in getting this particular perspective, right, from deal makers who work outside of our industry, but within our industry too, because it's fascinating to hear how the wider business world views the value and the health of the book business. Now, it's obviously been a particularly busy period for mergers and acquisitions, of course, with Penguin Random House and Simon & Schuster and HarperCollins and Houghton Mifflin Harcourt and Hachette and Workman, which Robin Warner personally worked on. So, you know, the first thing I wanted to ask Robin Warner was, did this uptick in deals, this volume of deals that we're seeing now, does that say something about the state of our industry? Or was it more driven by sort of circumstances or a little bit of both? And it turns out, well, you know, it's a little bit of both. You know, I think we focus a lot in our discussions about mergers and acquisitions on the consolidation aspect of publishing, which I'll get to in a minute. But if you look at these three major deals, Penguin Random House, Simon & Schuster, HarperCollins, Houghton Mifflin Harcourt, and Hachette and Workman, there were some pretty obvious drivers here, and Warner pointed this out. For one, CBS has been looking to unload Simon & Schuster, or rumored to have been looking to unload Simon & Schuster for a long time. This was no secret in the industry that CBS was not desirous of holding on to its publishing arm. And during the pandemic, the time was just right, of course, and PRH was the obvious front runner because of its sheer size. Now, is that size going to be an issue for federal regulators when it comes to approving the deal? We still don't know the answer to that question. But word is that officials are hopeful that the deal is going to close, or maybe not, by the end of the year. So we should have something in the coming weeks. So stay tuned on that. In terms of Harper and Houghton Mifflin Harcourt, you know, Houghton Mifflin Harcourt is an educational publisher with this media and trade group attached, a trade group with, I should point out, a very acclaimed backlist. And HMH officials have made the decision to focus on the education side, which is really in the teeth of a real digital transformation. And their trade group was simply a great fit for Harper, which does excellent work with the backlist and is very forward-thinking on the media side. So again, that was a sort of a match made by circumstance. And in terms of the Hachette and Workman deal, well, Workman was always going to be sold following the death of Peter Workman a few years ago. And Hachette just turned out to be a really good fit there as well. And not an easy fit, as Warner pointed out, because Workman's terms for its sale, the conditions they wanted to make the sale on, were not just business terms, right? It wasn't about getting a good price. Carolyn Workman wanted to be sure that the company retained its staff, retained its character, and she's using the proceeds from the sale to set up a charitable foundation. So yeah, we are definitely in a period of high deal volume, but it isn't necessarily driven by a set of market conditions, at least not exclusively, but also by a unique set of timing and circumstances. So I thought that was a really interesting perspective to keep in mind.
Well, indeed, timing matters, of course, but those market conditions you mentioned were clearly a factor in all of the activity. So what did Robin Warner say about the state of the market?
Absolutely. And you know, I asked about this too. Specifically, I asked about how COVID, or more specifically, the economic policies and realities resulting from COVID might be impacting consolidation, merger, and acquisition activity. And again, I think she offered a fascinating perspective because obviously, when you're making a strategic decision as huge as whether to buy or sell a company, you need to have a good view of the horizon, right? And how do you do that during a pandemic, an unprecedented pandemic at that? The good news, of course, during the pandemic is that print books have performed very well. But do you trust that trend? Do you trust that that trend is going to continue after the pandemic? Because the one thing that seems pretty certain about COVID-19 is the uncertainty of it. And Warner said that publishers are definitely struggling with trying to work out what she called the COVID effect. Now, in terms of short-term drivers, there's things like cheap financing that are affecting deals. And I thought this was interesting too, the idea that the cap gains tax is almost certainly going up with the new administration. So that's sort of forcing people to want to get deals done quickly now before things change. You know, and she noted that for most publishers too, you know, revenues have gone up dramatically in recent years. You know, people have discovered print. Print is sticking around, and ebooks and audiobooks have done very well during the pandemic. And audiobooks, of course, are their own new thing, adding terrific value to the publishing industry. But we are still in this, what she called this COVID effect period, she said, where, you know, buyers are wary of overpaying because, you know, once COVID does subside, people do wonder if things are going to settle down a bit. Still, she noted a common truth for many of these deals, and that's it's about market share, right? It's always about market share. The big guys are looking for as much market share as possible. And I thought it was funny because at one point she indicated that some of the bigger indies like Abrams and Chronicle Books could be ripe for acquisition. And I found that funny because she sort of put these two companies in play, right? If you read the coverage, it sounds like they're about to go on the market. But I have to say, my sense was that she was just using these two companies as an example. One other thing Warner pointed out was that the interest in publishers and the things that publishers are interested in buying is widening because publishers have a commodity that many businesses covet. They have the content, right? They have storytellers. And Warner said publishing companies are increasingly looking for businesses with ventures that are complementary books. And there was also this huge push for people to acquire publishing content, right? Especially to integrate publishing content into digital ventures. Think Netflix and Apple TV, which need the content to adapt for their services. So publishers have the IP, she noted, and that IP is really coveted out there, which makes it an exciting time for book publishing and for investment bankers working in the M&A part of book publishing.
Consolidation among the top players, though, raises concerns for authors, readers, and booksellers that are very real, Andrew. And Robin Warner wouldn't go there.
Yeah, no, and we knew that she couldn't because she's not a regulator after all, and she can't divulge details about potential clients or existing deals or potential deals. You know, she did acknowledge that there is sort of renewed activity and interest in the antitrust realm that has to be considered here, and she acknowledged the concerns that are out there. But she also pointed out that a lot of the bigger players distribute for smaller players. So it's possible there will be benefits to bigger players investing in the supply chain, she suggested. This is a point that Penguin Random House CEO Marcus Dooley also made, as well as other PRH officials at Frankfurt. They've been touting their $100 million investment in the supply chain, for example, and that there's another $100 million more likely to come. In fact, Dooley argued that big publishers and indies actually complement one another, though I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that the Authors Guild probably doesn't agree. In any case, none of this is going to be much comfort to people who watched our panel and who are very concerned about concentration of power at the very top of our business. And at one point, my colleague Fabrice Piau from Livre Hebdo in France tried to push the issue a little, but Robin Warner just couldn't comment, which of course we knew beforehand that she couldn't. So I'm afraid there really are no tidy answers. There are not a lot of insights here about for people who are really interested in what's going on with consolidation and concerned about consolidation. suffice it to say, these concerns are going to persist, and those concerns are very real, as you noted. But again, we should know more about this in the coming weeks, because regulators are going to be weighing in on the Penguin Random House Simon & Schuster deal at some point, and that's going to speak volumes as to where things are going to shake out with consolidation.
Klaus Driver brought a European perspective to the Global 50 CEO Talk discussion. He also reminded the audience that digital disruption isn't finished with publishing just yet.
Yeah, I thought that was really interesting too. You know, my friend and colleague Carlo Carreño always gets to ask and always comes up with the best questions and asks them in the best way. And you know, in a response to a question he asked about technology and publishing now versus a decade ago, you know, Driver made the point that even in the teeth of this print renaissance, publishers have to stay engaged with digital. And more to the point, they have to be focused, you know, maybe not so much on the format wars of the early days, you know, the ebooks or print, but more on data-driven approaches and how they're going to reach and retain their customers and readers. And he noted that there's this sort of feeling in the book industry, and I agree with him, that digitization is done. But publishers need to stay engaged, he said, with how they're going to reinvent their businesses, which, of course, now we know means you don't have to reinvent the product necessarily, right? I think it's undeniable in this age of powerful mobile devices and streaming services that consumer expectations and the environment is changing. Yeah, people are still going to buy print books. But, you know, when everything is available at your fingertips, what does that mean for your business? You know, we don't really know all the answers to that yet. But there are interesting times ahead, Driver said. And as the battle moves from the digitize it or not to ebook battles from those days of the early 2010s to something new, it's definitely going to be something to keep an eye on.
On stage with Publishing Perspectives' Porter Anderson, Penguin Random House CEO Marcus Doley offered his usual optimism about the future of publishing.
Yeah. So since, you know, it's been a while now, right? Since 2017, at least, that Doley has been doing what he called this global roadshow on why this is the best time in publishing since Gutenberg inventing the printing press some 600 years ago. And during his talk at Frankfurt, Marcus Doley offered six reasons why. Now, you can read more about Marcus Doley's talk on the PW site. And there's a recording out there, I'm sure. I don't know exactly where it is. If you dig around on the Frankfurt site, it would have to be there someplace, I would guess. But some of Doley's reasons are things that we've talked about a lot on the show, and I'll run them down quickly. First, he says it's a good time to be the best time to be in publishing because revenue's trending up and has been trending up in recent years. And I agree with him there that it's always a good place to start when you're seeking to be optimistic that you're making more money. The second and third reasons, I think, are really one reason. And that's, you know, Doley said that the industry has, quote, stable business models for physical distribution, and also has found a healthy coexistence between print and digital. And I suppose that's true. But I also think reasonable people like Klaus Driver can disagree about how the industry is approaching those, especially if you're not one of those people like Marcus Doley is that controls such a sizable portion of the English language trade book market. The fourth point that Doley said is that the audience is growing for books. And because of technology, they're now more reachable. Absolutely true. More people can buy books in more ways than ever before. And, you know, the population's growing. No, that's undeniable. The fifth thing, and Doley has pointed to this for many years now, and that's the continued growth of kids' books, which is, of course, bringing in more readers and training people to read books. And I also think that is true, right? I have two young readers in my house here, and Lord knows they love their iPads and they love their digital technology, but they also love their books. You know, their books are possessions to them. They're tactile. They hold them in their hands. They read them. They prefer to read their books than to read a book on an iPad. So I think Doley's got that on the money as well. And the sixth thing is, you know, audiobooks, something we've talked about a lot over the year. Digital audio has been a game changer, right? It has brought an entirely new revenue stream to publishing. And, you know, I've said it before, if you had told me 10 years ago that digital audio would be leading publishers to profitability in the digital space, I might not have believed it, but there we are. And Doley points out all six of these reasons that he pointed to held true during the pandemic. And he's right there as well. Now, look, I love an optimist. And Marcus Doley is very optimistic. And he has good reason to be optimistic. But again, I'm just not sure everyone would agree with the perspective, at least not his perspective, being such a massive publisher. And, you know, let me just leave it to the Authors Guild to explain the other point of view here, because it's surely a little hard for authors in the Authors Guild, for example, to believe that things can be so good, the best ever for publishers, while all their data, the Authors Guild's data and their reports show that year after year, things are not getting better for authors. So there's a disconnect there. Can this be really the best time ever for publishing and the worst time ever for authors? I'll leave that to another podcast.
Andrew Albanese, Publishers Weekly senior writer, thanks for joining me on the program.
My pleasure, as always.
Coming up on the next podcast from CCC, as one of the world's leading open access publishers, PLOS has led the way for two decades in developing business models that make even its most selective OA journals truly open to read and open to publish. Chief Publishing Officer Niamh O'Connor tells me her focus in 2021 is ensuring the PLOS portfolio includes the broadest range of researcher voices.
One of the things that we are doing, separate from our business models, but towards the same goal, is to really expand our presence so that the members of PLOS staff who are working with research communities understand the context and culture and kind of the experience that those researchers have and are much closer to them. And that, you know, we're not just coming at this all from being kind of somewhere else and not truly understanding what that experience is.
The next chapter in open access publishing, coming on the next CCC podcast. Our co-producer and recording engineer is Jeremy Brisky of Burst Marketing. You can subscribe to the program wherever you go for podcasts, and please do follow us on Twitter and on Facebook. I'm Christopher Keneally. Thanks for listening. Join us again soon for another Velocity of Content podcast from CCC.